Welcome to episode 20 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
Episode 20, lads.
Wow.
Episode 20. Can you believe that we have done 20 of these? Now, we've done additional MCM Comic-Con specials. We've done an interview special. But in terms of our regular standard episodes, this is number 20. What do you think of that?
Crazy.
Monstrous.
I like what you've done there. Mark, as ever, the king of wordplay, bringing it into the fact that this is our Monsters special. The review this week is Monsters Dark Continent. We're also then going to be talking about our top three monster movies, and we're also going to rewatch the monstrously bad Mac and Me.
Spoilers.
Sorry, yeah. Don't mean to give it away there. Let's get started.
As you just said there, Ben, on the opening of the show, monster movies, top three. That's the topic I set from last week. So I'm going to chuck it across to Mark first. What's your number three?
It is a very good classic film, not from the 80s, from the 90s.
Wow.
Tremors.
Okay.
So Tremors has always been one of my favourite films anyway. So it's been great to be able to talk about it this week for Monsters. Have you guys both seen it?
No. Yeah.
No, you've never seen Tremors.
I don't even know what it's about. Tell me
are you serious?
I'm deadly serious.
Well, it's got Kevin Bacon in it.
Bonus.
You sold already? about these monsters that basically live underground that are like really bad, big. I'd say they're like, I don't want to say slugs because that makes you think of these tiny slugs, but they're just monstrous, weird slugs that are underground.
Well, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this on Blu-ray now.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Bacon, and I know your favourite film is Footloose.
Of course, yeah.
Let's say more giant worms, that would be good.
Yeah.
It's really cheesy, it's a really good beer and pizza film. If we were still doing homework, this would be now me screaming at you saying you've got to watch this by next week. But if you get any time, watch it for me. Not plugging my band here, but I named my band's EP after this film, Tremors. It's that much of a place in my heart, but I'm not plugging the band, so I haven't said anything about the band name.
Yeah.
Available now on iTunes.
I will give you a guarantee right now. I'm never going to watch this film before I die. It's just not going to happen.
Well, I appreciate your honesty. Most people out there, we put it out to social media. We'll talk about their decisions in a bit. A lot of love for Tremors. So, Ben, don't ignore the people.
Oh, in all fairness, if a lot of people have said it, Ben, you might bloody have to now.
We'll see.
Come on then, beat it then. What have you got?
Well, I'm going back old school here. This is a film from 1964. It is Mothra versus Godzilla.
Oh, who doesn't love that film?
Yeah. It was the fourth in the original Toho set of Godzilla films. As a kid, I had all the original Godzilla films on VHS, and I used to watch them until the tapes ran out, you know, until they just ceased to work. And the one I watched the most was Mothra versus Godzilla. It was the first one where they did a kind of crossover and brought in a creature from another film series, and it's just a great classic film. It's hilarious.
Clearly where Marvel got their ideas from.
Of the shared universe.
Yeah.
There's that many of the Godzilla films that when we went last year, one of the first films I think us three saw together, which we before we podcast, I went back and looked at how many Godzilla films there were. And I'll be honest with you, I got a bit too frightened by the fact that there's that many. And I like the cheap, crappy, dodgy early version. So if you reckon that one's good, I haven't seen it, I'll check it out.
Yeah, get involved.
Nice.
Because strong rumours of Mothra for the sequel for Godzilla of the new American branch.
Yeah, which I could definitely see happening. First one was directed by Gareth Edwards, of course, and that's all going to come into play a little bit later on when we get to our review of Monsters.
I like what we're doing.
It's all connected.
This is good.
We're doing good with these episodes at the minute, aren't we? We had the superhero one last time, and I'm linking it all together. So
it's as if we like do some sort of work or research or
I know.
Put any effort in whatsoever.
Just turn up and record. Yeah.
Crazy stuff. So I'll go with my number three then. Trollhunter.
Oh, Trolls! That was quite good.
Absolutely love this film. Have you guys seen it?
Yes.
I haven't. It's one of those. It is one that I intend to see, though. It's one of those I've been meaning to watch on Netflix for ages and haven't got around to it yet.
It's such a cool film. I went to see it at the cinema. It was on for a week in this country. I went to see it at the cinema because I was that excited that this film was coming out. I'm not going to sound pretentious. You know my theories on people like Lars von Trier, and you know, Scandinavian cinema is not something I'm generally interested in.
Yeah.
But if you name a film Trollhunter and film it kind of mockumentary style about a man who hunts trolls for the Norwegian government, I'm in.
Yeah. It is brilliant, Ben. You're going to love it.
Yeah. Every review I've read has said to me, you're going to enjoy this. I've just not got around to it.
It's brilliant. There's so many different types of troll, and it's all shot in a very serious style as well,
yeah,
which makes it even all the more better. It has to be in there, number three.
There's some bad news about that film. They are going to remake it, and it's going to be probably Will Smith starring in it, or his son.
Yeah, they're doing an American remake. Ugh.
Check it out, dude.
I will. I said I would.
Yeah, but you won't watch Tremors.
I was honest about
but
that.
But I want
as well.
You to watch Tremors. No. It's good.
In all fairness, the last film you made him watch, we'll get to later. So,
my number two, a British film, not from the 80s, 2005.
Right.
Directed by the one and only Neil Marshall, The Descent.
Okay.
Please tell me you've both seen that.
I haven't.
Oh.
I have, but I was like three sheets to the wind at the time, so I don't really remember much of it.
A brilliant, brilliant film about a group of girls that go down to some caves. It's a really British starting film, real good British feel to it. It's horrendous. It is so, so messed up. There's these monsters that look like, I want to say Gollum, but with like covered in wax. They're really, really bizarre.
I'm glad you didn't say slugs again.
Yeah, every film involves slugs underground, yeah. Did anyone ever watch that X-Files episode where there was that creature that was always white with the weird eyes like that, which you can't see if you listen on the podcast, but I'm putting the whites on my eyes. It reminds me of that. I don't know what the character's name is, but it's a really good British film. Adam, please go and watch this because they don't make British films like this in the last 20 years. It is superb.
This one was made within the last 20 years.
Just. 95, we're okay. It's outstanding. It's got a really dark ending to it as well. The Americans had to change it and give it a different context, so make sure you watch the British version that has the original ending. It annoys me they had to change it. Superb film. Again, a lot of love out there on the social media this week for this film. Check it out.
Good stuff. Well, my next one, I'm sticking with the whole kaiju thing, the Japanese monster movie, but this is an American version of, and it's Pacific Rim.
Oh.
It's a film that didn't review very well in America, in England, or really across the world. The reviews weren't great, but I think fans responded to it. We've discussed Del Toro in the past. He's a visionary director. I love his work. And I love the fact that two of his favourite things from sort of Japanese culture were the kaiju, the monster movies, and then the mecha, the big robot mm-hmm. suits. And he decided, fuck it, let's just whack them both together. Let's have mechas versus monsters. And I love it. It's a great, great film.
And it worked.
Yeah.
I wanted more of it. It was that kind of blockbuster that came out that was how Transformers should have been done. That effect, the way he did it on that budget was outstanding. And it's one of those films that I find a lot of people either love or hate. Mm. And I'm definitely on the love side of this film. I think it's great and I can't wait to see more of it. And is it next year we get a sequel or has it been put back?
I'm not sure of the date. I know there's one coming, but it can't come soon.
And the 3D is superb in that film. Really, really good. Have you seen that?
Yeah. It's my number two.
Oh, I was just about to say this could be the only week that none of us have any crossovers.
Yeah, it's my number two. I absolutely love Pacific Rim. Unbelievable. I didn't actually watch it at the cinema. I kind of looked at it and thought, this film does not look good.
Mm.
I thought, it might be a great action film. I'll watch it when it comes out on DVD. One of my biggest regrets is that I didn't see this film in 3D.
Yeah. I would be pissed off at myself as well if I hadn't. It's one of those. It's the same reason why I'm pissed off I didn't see Prometheus in the cinema, to have seen it in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same with me and Sharknado. Come to my house one day, Adam. We'll watch it in 3D.
Sounds good, actually.
It's a reason to...
No, there's not giant slugs in it.
Is it me already for number one? Yeah. Unless you want to talk more about how good Pacific Rim is?
The acting's great in it. You know, it's got a cast like Idris Elba. It's got Charlie Hunnam, who was great in Sons of Anarchy. It's got Charlie Day from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, who's great in it. It's just a great film, top to bottom. Can't wait for the sequel.
Nice. Number one for me is an 80s film.
Of course
we've
got
to get it in there. I've been working on this list a lot, and I realise that it's probably my favourite topic we've done so far, because I love horror, but I realise that a lot of the horror films I like are monster movies. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about Gremlins, because I think that's a fantastic film, but I could not go on the website afterwards and see that I had left this out. It would not sit right with me.
Yeah.
The Thing. I'm sorry, I talk about it as much as I can, but it is my favourite film ever made, but it's also my favourite monster film. I can't leave it out.
Sorry, the what?
The Thing.
Who's that by?
John Carpenter.
And what's that t-shirt you're wearing today, by the way?
A headshot t-shirt of The Thing.
The Thing, yeah.
But yeah, a 1982 film. Great year, 1982. Legend was born. Anyone hasn't seen this film, please check it out. It is actually a remake. A lot of people don't know that. John Carpenter is one of the best film directors in the world. He's done masterpiece after masterpiece after masterpiece, but this for me is the top of the pile that he's done. It's about a basically alien that attacks a group of, I'd say, what they're research scientists in the Antarctic. Mm-hmm. And some of the effects in this film makes me realize that you don't need CGI. He spent a lot of time on the puppetry and the kind of stop motion and everything for this film. It is a masterpiece. And most weeks I will call stuff like Sharknado 2 a masterpiece. But this, for once, I want to class officially as Mark's masterpiece of the week. Okay?
Yeah.
Because I'm not allowed to give anything else in this episode a masterpiece.
I think that's also been Mark's masterpiece of episode 1,
yeah.
4,
yeah.
8,
yeah.
9.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
It's the suspense at the end with Kurt Russell is amazing. Mm. I've never got bored of watching this film. If you haven't seen it, please check it out.
We're talking about it.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. The thing for me.
Yeah, I think you're going to like my number one choice, Mark. It's Jaws.
I knew, you know what, I sat there.
Amazing.
Thought, I sat there and thought, Ben is going to have Jaws as number one.
Yeah, now, as long-time listeners of the show will know, I hadn't seen Jaws until about, 4 or 5 months ago? And then we used to do an old feature called Homework, where if it ever came up that one of us hadn't seen a big film, we'd have to go away and watch it and talk about it. And I, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I don't think I've ever been as excited on the podcast as I was when I was talking about Jaws after I'd seen it. And I kick myself for having not seen it sooner, because it's perfect. It's a great, great film. And Jaws is a monster. It's a big old shark. I count that as a monster.
Monster of the Sea.
Yeah. And it's my favourite monster movie.
Wow. I mean, I feel like one of those like proud parent moments when I'm looking over and like, oh, I'm so glad. Because I remember when we started the podcast, people were saying on Facebook and stuff like, how can Ben talk about films if he hasn't seen it? And my biggest fear was that we're going to go and watch it 1 week, you do it on your homework, come back and go, yeah, it's all right. But because you loved it so much, it just proves you are a legend.
Cheers, man.
To pick that as your number one as well, that's a big thing, just to go, I haven't seen it 6 months ago and it's gone bang and knocked everything else out of the water.
And genuinely is my number one. When I do the topics normally, unless we specifically stipulate it, mine are never in order. They're just, you know, in any order that they come. But this one is specifically my favourite monster movie and I can't see anything replacing it.
I hope one day, this is kind of me nudging you saying, please boys, or myself, we'll have it as a rewatch, because I just want to sit and talk about Jaws.
Yeah.
Adam.
Well, I'm actually very annoyed with a friend of mine, because he suggested this film in his top three to me when I was chatting to him about it. And I sat there and thought, oh, crap, yeah, that is a monster movie, isn't it? And then I thought, and I love that film. That probably is one of my favourite films. And I can't believe I'm going to end it on this. Monsters, Inc.
No, I think
perfect.
That's a good shout.
Absolutely
I
perfect.
I think that's a good shout.
Yep, it's in the title.
Yeah.
It literally, he went, probably Monsters, Inc. And I just thought, fuck yeah. Yeah. Monsters, Inc. is a great film.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't... I'm not going to argue with
no,
that.
No, I can't argue with it at all. It's about monsters, and it's a brilliant film. It fits all the criteria of this particular topic.
I fucking love it.
Yeah. I don't think that's on the cover.
Skip to the end.
Blu-ray re-release.
Fucking love it.
But, I mean, it's my top monster film. It's my top film involving monsters.
Yeah.
Good enough.
And it should be.
Great film. It probably would be in my... If we extended it to a five, I'd probably have
this
it
is the one
five.
Topic I wish it was a five. I hated leaving Gremlins off. I couldn't... Oh, but, mate, Monsters, Inc. I know I talked about it, I think, on a previous episode, but I can't stop watching Sully's hair. You know, the fur, the way it moves. Yeah. That is still amazing. That must be about 10 years old, that film.
I think it's longer. 2001, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
It
the looks animation spectacular. Is unbelievable. Yeah.
Monsters, Inc.
So, guys, from social media, we always love those guys. So, on Twitter, we've had Risotto, which is at Jizz and Fizz.
At what now?
Jizz and Fizz.
Right.
Nightmare on Elm Street, which is kind of, cool, Halloween. It's a, he's a monster. And Fright Night, which is an unbelievable film.
Is that
the original or
one?
The remake original. With Colin Farrell?
That is dreadful. That is the worst film ever made.
And David Tennant.
Oh, my Lord. We've had Carl Werewolf, which is at MCM at _ were. He's put An American Werewolf in London. Now, that is a brilliant film.
Did you ever see the sequel?
No. Was that in Paris?
Yeah. It's
No, I didn't want to. Because that's a classic.
Yeah.
The Fly, which I love.
Yeah.
86 version, obviously. And Alien.
Of course.
JC Chaos, which is at JC _ Chaos. New listener, thank you. Midnight Hour. Never seen it.
Not familiar.
No? You seen it? No. Evil Dead, the original.
Yeah.
Masterpiece. And Evil Dead, Army of Darkness. Not great. it's not that good at all. But, if, you know, good on you. Wasted the Show, which is at Wasted the Show. Hellraiser, Hellraiser 2, and Hellraiser Night 3, I think. So he just loves Hellraiser. And he's put also Nightmare on Elm Street 3. He can have 3 and 4. Jessica Speed, which is at FizzSnap. The Thing, The Descent, and Jaws. You're nice. A legend, Jessica. And finally, our good friend Matt from Funeral for a Friend.
Oh, yeah.
He's got involved this week. Number 3, The Howling.
Nice.
Brilliant film. Number 2, he's cheated a bit here. Godzilla, all of them apart from the 90s version.
That's fair.
We'll let I'll him have that. It. We'll I'll let him have it. That. He's been good to us. And finally, Alien.
Yep, good choice.
So is it your turn for a topic next week, Ben?
It is my turn for a topic. I've been thinking about this one. I think it's fair to say that this podcast is a sausage fest. It's the opinions of three men. We like masculine, testosterone-filled films with explosions and scantily clad women, all that sort of stuff. So I want to redress that balance a little bit. So next week...
Top 3 porns?
Yeah. No. Next week, or next episode, top 3 actresses.
Lovely. Okay.
So I know we were considering at some point later on in the future doing our favourite actors, and it would yeah. probably encompass men and women, but I want to specifically do one for the ladies. Nice. So this is top 3 actresses on the next episode.
Bring it on.
I generally thought you were going to say top 3 Channing Tatum topless films.
I could probably name 5. We've been to see Monsters Dark Continent, the second in the Monsters franchise of movies. The film tells the story of a few soldiers who are shipped out to the Middle East to effectively deal with the monster outbreak that has raged over the last decade, as well as dealing with insurgents in the Middle East who don't like the Americans sort of coming onto their turf, as is so often the case. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the movie, and before we start to review it, we were actually lucky enough to speak to the director of the film, Tom Green, who also co-wrote it. And here's what he had to say.
So my first question for you today is, what kind of films influenced you when making this film? Was there any kind of monster or sci-fi films that you researched or you watched or that you've always been influenced by?
Well, you know, because it's, I suppose, first and foremost a war film, I went back to all the classics and, you know, we've all seen them and you revisit all those. But, you know, what you don't want it to be is a derivative of any of those films. There's always going to be crossover, you know, you're always going to be dealing with certain similar things thematically in terms of, you know, the kind of relationships between the troops, the difficult decisions they're forced to make. So there's always going to be that sort of crossover from other war films, and we're seeing that in some of the reviews so far. But the war film that affected me most that I ever saw was a film called Come and See. I remember going to see it at film school, and it's a very devastating film, and I sort of sat in the cinema kind of left cold afterwards, you know, for a long time. And that really explored this, I think, the idea of this central character in our film, of Sam Keeley's character, yeah. of a young man who has sort of a certain idealism about warfare, about the military, and goes into that and actually has all that ripped away from him. And there's a certain rawness to that kid's performance. I mean, it's an incredibly raw performance in Come and See. And I wanted an actor who could deliver that sort of rawness rather than just a sort of emoting a young man at war. Mm. So that kind of idea of being able to take a young man who idealises that side of things and then has everything sort of fall away from him and he's stripped bare and this devastatingly sort of raw performance at the heart of the film was what I wanted to try and have that in a science fiction film, which yeah. I thought was original and would be unique. And then also, I looked at a lot of documentaries, actually, and did a lot of first-hand research with actual troops because I wanted this to be like any good science fiction where it's just nudged 5 minutes into the future, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. So we're exploring very socially relevant and relatable themes and ideas, but with authenticity. So I looked at a lot of documentaries as well, rather than necessarily lots of science fiction,
yep.
because what for me this film's about is exploring something human.
It's more of a war film,
yeah.
with elements of science
That's
fiction.
It. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Coming from television and short film, what was it like for you making the step up to features?
Yeah, I mean, it's been fantastic, actually. In a way, it was more of a jumping into the deep end, going into Misfits, because I was only 6 weeks out of film school when I did that. And that, for me, even though it was quite low-budget TV in its way, and it was a digital channel show, I always said, well, let's make them as if they're independent British movies. You know, let's not think, you know, let's think ambitiously and more ambitiously than we've ever thought before on a digital channel. Going into that, it almost felt like Blockbuster, coming off the back of short films, where you're making yeah. your films for very, very, very limited resource. But in a way, some of the processes are the same on a day-to-day in terms of, yeah. You know, where do you need to put your camera? How do you work with the actors? And the pace of television helped me shoot a film like this, which was shot very quickly. You know, we shot in 4.5 weeks. So it sharpens you up in terms of, you know, hopefully being able to move through your day quickly and sort of tell your story and sort of prioritise what you need to prioritise for the narrative and for the overall film. So I think, you know, everything I've done to date has allowed me, hopefully, to make a more confident first feature. You know, for me, it's been a great process to have done 3 years in television and work with professional crews in that way and sharpen up, I think, and get used to that the rigours of that. And also, it's a demanding process. I think what's different about feature is it's much more of a marathon, you know. And a series of Misfits was sort of six, seven months of my time from start to finish. This is 3 years, you know, and that pacing of yourself mentally as much as anything. And, you know, you're trying to fight to get this thing across the line and protect it and fill it full of as much ambition as you can. You've kind of also got to allow for this thing's going to go on and on and on. And you've got to, you think the bell's ringing, you think, you know, I'm out, and you go, no, I've got to get back in the ring, one more round to go, you know, and you sort of, so that I've learned a lot about pacing yourself, I think, in this process.
My question is more about kind of looking at Gareth Edwards, who did the first one, moving on to Godzilla, as we know. Is that something that kind of you look at and think, that's somewhere I'd love to go?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would love to make
Godzilla 2.
I mean, I don't know about Godzilla 2, but absolutely. I mean, what Gareth's done is extraordinary. I mean, it's an extraordinary story. You know, he for me, I saw Monsters 1, I just thought, that's one of the most innovative pieces of filmmaking I've seen for many years. It was that simplicity of idea of how you capture that material and then how you embellish it and how you create huge scale to your work. Mm-hmm. And that really resonated with me. In my own way, I've been trying to do that with my short films, with my work on Misfits. And so when they approached me and talked to me about that, I completely connected with the ethos of the filmmaking. And that's all I've tried to... That's what I've tried to preserve and what really, as I say, I connect with. And I have an affinity with that and with Gareth when I speak to him about it. But, you know, it's an extraordinary, you know, unique story in a way, Gareth, you know, to do what he's done. And what he's done is amazing, and how he's handled it and how he's, you know, navigated his way from a lower-budget filmmaking process to the pressure of something like Godzilla is so commendable. And,
I mean, you must
and
draw amazing. Some inspiration
so
from
it. So
well.
He's a great inspiration, I think. Seb, my VFX supervisor, said today he, you know, provided a great inspiration for a lot of young independent filmmakers or want to be filmmakers, that you can actually think with Hollywood ambition and do it in a much more kind of innovative, you know, way with a limited resource. And so I hope in our way, our film's within that. It's part of his legacy. It goes on to do the same sort of things. I think you make a film that you connect to, you feel is a story worth telling, you connect to the material, and you think, does this film give me a set of parameters to show what I stand for in terms of the integrity of my filmmaking, but also the scale and ambition I have as a filmmaker? You know, I think it's fantastic that the franchise of Monsters is saying, look, you know, this is an arena for young British filmmakers who have, hopefully, craftsmanship and real ambition.
Definitely.
To make bigger, more international stories in the British film industry in this way and at this budget level. How, you know, and that's the arena that Gareth was in, and I'm hopefully in now. So that's what it's about for me. It's like I want to make as big a films as I can go on to make, as long as I still connect to that central idea within him and the integrity.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So really cool to speak to Tom there, and I'm sure we'll get into some of the details of what he discussed later on in the review. But let's get started. Adam, I'm going to throw to you first. What were your initial thoughts of the movie?
Yeah, it was very interesting to watch. Because obviously, we were lucky enough to speak to Tom. So going in, I kind of knew not to expect it as a sci-fi film.
Yeah.
I knew to expect it kind of more of a, not necessarily coming of age, but more of a war story told to the back set of a monster's outbreak, sci-fi outbreak.
Yeah.
So knowing that it was a kind of a war film, it was very interesting to see that this film could have been set during any war. This could have been set during the first Gulf War, the second Gulf War. It could have been set during World War One, World War Two, with a similar premise.
Mm.
The monsters are just kind of a background noise to the whole thing.
They're almost entirely incidental to the whole film. And I guess your mileage on whether you enjoyed the film or not is whether you're happy with the monsters being entirely incidental to the whole film.
Now, with this being a follow-up to Gareth Edwards' Monsters, in all fairness to Gareth Edwards' original film, they were kind of... You didn't really see them. They were also a bit of a a backdrop during the film.
Yeah.
So knowing this was kind of a war story going in, I was very impressed with the way the story kind of went from point A to point B. From what we saw, the emotional changeover, the following the characters as, you know, their first tour of duty and watching them kind of realise what's going on out here, that it's not just the monsters that you have to fight, it's the insurgents that are trying to kill you as well.
But that, I think that really was one of my issues with the film. You know, as we've just talked about, the fact that the monsters were kind of incidental to the whole thing, the plot was really about how they dealt with the insurgents. So it felt to me as if the monsters part was sort of plastered on because it was an established franchise with an established name. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't know Tom Green's mind, but it seems to me that this might have been a script he was kicking around before the Monsters franchise came along, and he's retrofitted it to fit him in that franchise. Because for all that you barely saw the monsters in the first film, they drove the whole plot. Everything the two main characters on their sort of road trip, everything they did was because of the monsters, whereas everything that the soldiers in this film do has very little to do with them, other than being shipped overseas because they exist. Nothing they did in the film had anything to do with them, and for all that I knew going in, as you say, that it was going to be more of a war film than a sci-fi, I found myself disappointed.
Mm. Yeah, echoing basically what you two said, as a war film without the title Monsters Dark Continent, I think this would have been quite a good film. Mm. Take out the monster bits, you know, just there's probably 10 minutes in the whole film with the monsters.
Yeah.
one thing I want to highlight here straight away is that I was quite let down. I felt it was probably half an hour too long. Mm-hmm. I think the running time's just over 2 hours, and it felt like three. I'm not taking anything away here from the direction of the film because I thought it was superb. The cinematography is up there with some of the best I've seen this year. It was brilliantly made, but it was boring. I didn't really care for the characters, and I felt very frustrated at times. I was very bored in parts, and I just felt it was being dragged out. And I don't want to say that because I really wanted to enjoy this film, and I loved the first one, but as you said, this should not have been associated with the first one. This would have just worked as a standalone war film.
Yeah.
And it would have been a bloody good one.
Yeah. And I completely echo what you say about the direction and the cinematography. I thought some of the shots that were filmed out in Jordan were beautiful, so beautifully framed, and the sort of the desert of the country looked amazing. So I can't fault the technical side of the film. It's everything else. You mentioned there the characters. You didn't really care for the characters. I actively hated them. The four young lads who first get drafted out from Detroit out to the Middle East, you meet them in Detroit and they're sort of four chavvy lads, and we're supposed to like them. They're supposed to be the protagonists, but we see them getting pissed up, you know, shagging strippers, and you know, and immediately I was thinking, well, these are dickheads. I don't care if they die in this war. I didn't like them at all. Then they went off to war, and you know, invariably they all died. Oh, in fact, there were just wanted to point out there were two black characters in this film. They were the first two who died. So it's nice to see that old trope still going, isn't it? Good God!
I agree with what you're saying about the characters there as well, because I mean, we see them. One of them has a kid.
Yeah.
Parker Sawyer's character.
Yeah, Williams, I think his name is.
And then the next scene, we see him off getting drunk, doing drugs, and having sex with random women.
Yeah. I didn't care when they started getting blown up, and I'm supposed to, surely.
So if we're touching point on the actors themselves, I think who pretty much carried the whole film was Johnny Harris.
Yeah, there's Freighter.
Who plays Freighter. Now, I thought he did a good job with the script he was given and the story that he had to play out and the emotions he went through. Now, when we spoke to him last year, he was telling us about how he spent a lot of time with the people there to get a good mindset and to really kind of understand and get in the head of someone that went through these emotions. And I do think, hats off to him at times, I could really feel it. And I think he gave everything to that part. And at times when you saw him break down, and you know, I think when you had to watch one of his friends be killed in front of him, I felt it. And I thought, do you know what? He's done really well in this film. And hats off to him.
I would agree with you. I think he was the best thing in it by a country mile. I thought he was really, really strong. He's, you know, he was also in Fortitude on Sky this year, and he put in a good performance in that. He's having a really good year, is Johnny Harris. I think he was kind of let down by his co-stars a little bit. The second half of the film, massive spoiler alert, pretty much everyone is dead except for Johnny Harris's character and Sam Keeley's character. And that's when it becomes boring. At least in the first half of the film, you've got some gunfights and explosions and whatnot. The second half of the film becomes a sort of two-hander, and it's sort of an existential Apocalypse Now type thing, which is all well and good if that's what you know you're going in for, but it was just tedious, the whole second half of the film of that.
It was interesting to when we spoke to Tom, how he mentioned some of his influences on war films, because it was very much a film like that. It was like the old hand trying to guide the new hands. Mm-hmm. And this kind of cyclical cycle of war. So, you know, this guy has been doing it for 8 tours now.
Yeah.
And he's become hardened like this. And, you know, all that matters to him is the mission and getting things done. And he's trying to force that onto these guys. Whereas, I mean, Sam Keeley's character appears for most of the film to be actively rejecting that.
Yeah.
Trying to not be that guy, trying to not become him, only to start becoming him towards the end.
Yeah.
And then he obviously, spoiler alert, he has a giant breakdown and starts killing some civilians.
Yeah. The reason why I think Johnny Harris has the best of this film, I think probably because he is the strongest actor in it, for one mm-hmm. thing, and also because he has the best defined character. He has a yeah. weariness about him. You feel the fact that he's had these 8 tours. You can believe everything. You really feel the character of him. But the other guys were so thinly drawn. Like yeah. Joe Dempsey's character was basically a bit of a scoundrel. That's it. He's got about 5
Frankie
lines in the
Maguire,
film.
Frankie McGuire, yeah.
Yeah, Frankie. And then he dies.
Yeah.
You've got the one who, as you said, has got a kid, and you know his role was basically the black one. He died. You've got Sam Keeley, who, up until the second half of the film where he grows a pair, basically does nothing. He just whimpers a lot. There was another guy who died who was basically the comic relief. He was the sort of yeah. wild one. He was like Murdoch from the A-Team. They were so thinly sketched that can you care when they die?
I think the point they were trying to make with Sam Keeley's character especially was, you know, he entered into the army and was drafted into this war, not quite expecting what was going to happen when he got there. And obviously, their first kind of mission out, people are getting shot and killed. And he seizes up a bit. He's, from that moment on, he's just not okay. He's not okay with being there anymore.
But we've seen that story and that character told and played 1,000 times yeah. and better, is the truth of it.
Let's talk about the monsters themselves. So when we did actually see them,
yeah.
I thought they did look good.
CGI is great.
It did look a lot like Cloverfield to me, and they weren't very original monsters, but I really did buy into them. When you saw the helicopter flying, the scale yeah. of them, they looked fantastic, and that was very well done. And we've seen bad CGI on budgets probably 10 times this recently.
Yeah, Avengers.
Exactly. Yeah. Probably 100 times this budget.
Yeah.
So I think that Tom Green has done a fantastic job with that. And at the start, we are introduced to the monsters by... It looks like a dogfight's about to happen.
Mm.
And we see this monster going up against like a pit bull. And I will be honest, I thought that CGI was flawless. I thought it looked yeah. brilliant. And my favourite scene of the whole film was at the very end, there's a little boy that's got a box with one of the monsters in. And he hands it over, opens it, and you see this completely different monster, like a baby-scaled version of the main one. And it suddenly flings out all these legs and jumps into the sand. And I thought that looked amazing. I thought, God, give loads of money to Tom Green and give him a decent script and film because he could nail this.
Yeah, I agree. I think my favourite part with the monsters was there's a scene at night where the monster fires this kind of phosphorescent stuff into the sky.
That looked great.
Yeah,
that looked really cool.
You know, I can't deny how great this film looks. It is beautifully done. It's yeah. very well put together.
No, I agree with you. I think the design of the monsters is cool as well. All of them, in fact. There's even some of the smaller ones that are just kind of running across the desert.
They were like little velociraptor type things.
Yeah, they look really cool as well. And, you know, you said the film's framed in a great way. And you know, objectively, you can see the story they're telling. But I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the story before and we've seen it done better.
Yeah.
And don't associate it with monsters because it's nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
So, guys, should we try and finish this with a score?
Yeah, for me, it's a 5. It's a 5 out of 10. I think it's a great-looking film. I think Johnny Harris is particularly good in it, but I think just the lack of originality lets it down.
Yeah, I'll bang in the middle, 5 out of 10. I think that's fair.
I think it's a fair assessment. I think maybe my rating's slightly higher at a 6, just because I kind of knew what to expect going in. I kind of, again, thought... It's going to be a war. I wasn't expecting a lot of science fiction. It was the cinematography, the direction alone kind of deserves a fairly decent mark. So I'm going to say 6.
Well, that gives us an overall score of 5 out of 10.
This wouldn't be skipped to the end without us giving. Agree?
Yeah, we're givers.
Massive givers. following on from that review for the film Monsters Dark Continent, we were lucky enough to get a very, very rare exclusive, one of, I think there's 100 made Mondo-style print, brilliant pieces of artwork for the movie in a style form of a post, and it is really, really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Check out Instagram this week, which is Skip the End Podcast, and also on Twitter at STT Podcast. We'll put some pictures up just to show how great this is. It's one of those prizes that I don't really like parting with. This will look beautiful framed. We want you to basically have the opportunity to win this. So to enter, all you need to do is tell us who directed the original Monsters movie. You can tell us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/skipthempodcast, Twitter at STT Podcast, or you can also email us, which is podcast@skiptheend.co.uk. Send us your answer, and on the next episode, we're going to basically reveal who's won. So good luck on that. And on the subject of who's won, it's now time for us to announce our Fast 7 competition winners.
Woo!
We had 10 packs thanks to our good friends at Universal. 10. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
We've sorted out loads of you for this. There's really nice water bottles with Fast 7 on. There's some baseball caps and some cool t-shirts. So it's now time to read off the winners. Thanks to Twitter, we've had Elizabeth Marshall, which is @the_LizMarshall. We've had James, which is @ChillDo2002. We've had Aaron TWD for Life, so The Walking Dead, @PersonalAlAaron. We've had Wilts Movie Fan, which is @WiltsMovieFan. Andy Garrett, which is @CurlyAndyXBL. We've had Ian Young, which is @IanYoungCop. We've had Chris Geffen, which is @GeffStyle1. We've had Andy Wilson via Facebook, Rob Garamani on Facebook, and Jason Neal on Facebook. So you will all be receiving those in the post, and we'll be getting in contact with you over the next few days. So well done on that.
So skip back in time again.
I love this feature.
I love this feature
it's
too.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well done, Mark. It's the one feature you've come up with that's actually been a success.
And stay tuned for my suggestion for feature later in this episode.
Oh, Christ.
So what year are we on now? 2010, is it?
2010? Yeah. Yeah, it's a good year.
So skip back in time, 2010. What's your favourite film? Ben.
Now, I suspect one of you might have this, but if not, I think you'll both agree that it's a very bloody good film.
Can I have a guess?
Go on.
Scott Pilgrim.
No.
Oh.
It's Inception.
Oh. That little small independent movie. That,
yeah. Inception to me is just an absolute masterpiece. For me, I would probably say it's my second favourite Nolan movie. I love it. I think it's flawless. It's one of those films, actually, that I feel the need to defend all the time because you get these people who say, it doesn't make any sense. Well, it would have if you were paying attention.
Yep.
Because it does make sense.
But I don't understand at the end when the spinning top keeps going around. What's that mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It means you shouldn't be watching films like that. Piss off and watch Legally Blonde.
Which is also a good film. I quite like Legally Blonde.
Yeah. That's actually my choice now.
So Inception, I think, is a great film. Brilliantly directed, great story. Leonardo DiCaprio is the king. He's superb in it. There's not really anything other I can say.
Mate,
brilliant.
As soon as Nolan announced he was working with Leonardo DiCaprio, I jizzed.
Did you now?
I did.
Yeah. Quite literally.
Yeah. It's perfect. It's absolute perfection.
Don't always amuse me when you see the two of them when they were filming together and DiCaprio was like his mini-me.
Yeah.
He was
same sort of
exactly
hair.
The same hair, same
suit,
sort of clothes, yeah.
Nice.
Mark?
So it's our favourite film of 2010. So it's not the best, but it's the film that I went, I love that film, and it took me by surprise. Easy A.
Great film.
I absolutely love this film. For me, it's got Emma Stone in it, who plays a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful character in this film. I love her anyway. And I've heard she has break up with Spider-Man recently.
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, sorry, dude. So, you know. Anyway.
Spider-Man.
She's not actually Mary Jane, you realize. Whoever she was.
Gwen Stacy.
That's it.
Tell me the names of the parents in this. In it's Stanley, what's his name? The bald guy.
Tucci.
How cool is that guy?
Yeah.
He's great in every role he plays. I know, I'm shocking. I should have done more research on that. But the mum is Patricia Clarkson.
Yeah.
And those two are the greatest parents ever.
They're so cool,
and
they
really are.
Yeah.
I love the way that they treat the brother as kind of like this adopted... well, he is adopted, but they always kind of make a really kind of joke about it. And the humour on this film really works for me. And I didn't know anything about this film. It wasn't like I'd seen trailers for it or... I think I just... got it on Blu-ray and it had Emma Stone in it. And I just thought this is a really good comedy Every character is likable, really strong story, and it does feature, you know who?
Sandman,
Thomas Hayden Church. And if you haven't seen this film, it's a kind of feel-good film.
Yeah.
It does make you feel good.
Uplifting.
That's it really is.
I'm curious, does Mark just pick films where people from Spider-Man movies have been in there? Yeah,
especially if it's Thomas Hayden Church. I mean, he went on about Sideways a few weeks ago.
Whenever I can get him in there to justify this, but no. Easy A is my choice. Adam.
Excellent choice. I think mine's obvious. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Great choice.
You know how much I love this film. I've spoken before that I've actually broken up with a girlfriend because she didn't like this film.
Quite right.
So
you should do.
Yeah, it's only right.
Shame.
It's a brilliant film. It's really well acted. There's some great people in it. You've got Aubrey Plaza. You've got Michael Cera, of course, as Scott Pilgrim. Anna Kendrick's in it. It's just a brilliant film.
Ramona Flowers.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Yeah, she's great.
I love her.
The music is brilliant as well, a lot of which was co-written by Beck. Mm-hmm. And we discussed on the show before. I think I had it in my list of favourite soundtracks. Go out there and buy that or download that. That's awesome.
And let's not forget some of the other actors they throw in there. Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Brandon Roth.
Yeah.
It's just
I love that film. I haven't watched it for a while.
Yeah.
It's been a few months. I'm going to revisit that again soon.
That's going to be a rewatch soon enough, I think.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And Edgar Wright.
Perhaps it is.
Ooh, oh my God, it's Adam's choice today. Well. Was that a hint?
Stay tuned to find out if he's a bullshitter or not. We've had some come through on the social media. Twitter, you know what it is by now, at STT Podcast. We've had Margie, which is at Margie No Way. She said Salt. And her justification is because Jolie kicks ass.
That film's shit.
There's no wrong or right. Everyone's allowed to have their suggestion.
It's your favourite film.
Well, yeah,
and
yeah. No, it's not her favourite film.
As
you said, it's not the best film with it. It's your favourite, but that film is objectively shit.
Yeah. So perhaps she loves shit films, and that's why.
Maybe.
We've had Riffa Jana Gilani, and they've agreed with you with Inception. Joe Pollard, at JC underscore Pollard, King's Speech.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've not seen that, and I probably should. Yeah, I hate it.
Very good. You realise that he doesn't like slice people's throats like he does in Kingsman. It's not quite like that.
No. Movies Made Simple, Wreck 2. Brilliant film.
Is that like the Spanish horror film?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, very well made. And finally, William Cross, which is at Lateness Will with Blue Valentine.
Hmm. Is that the one with Ryan Gosling?
It is.
Yeah, that's a good film. Really
not
good
seen
film.
It. Surprise.
Worth watching.
No one's gone for Predators.
Featuring Topher Grace as a marine or whatever the fuck he's meant to be.
Stay tuned for next episode in 2 weeks when we'll be discussing the movies from 2009.
Hi, this is Stuart Raffle, writer-director of Mac and Me, and you are listening to Skip to the End podcast. It's now time for a new rewatch, and what better film than Mac and Me? I know Ben is a huge fan of this one. Anyway, enjoy my film, and thanks for listening.
So, as you just heard, from the man himself, Mac and Me.
Unbelievable, that is.
It's nice that you harassed him until he did that for us.
cost me 50 quid, that did. No. Mac and Me. This is a film that
divides opinion.
Well, I was going to say that Ben wasn't expecting, was it? Because I queued him up with Kevin Smith, and you were actually happy that we didn't go with Kevin Smith and went with this.
Yeah, comparatively happy, yeah.
I'd never seen this film. This was my first viewing. So it's kind of not a rewatch for me.
Mm.
I bloody loved this film. I'm going to say it now. I did.
Did you break the rules of the rewatch?
No, as long as two have seen it.
I've not seen it.
Oh.
Yeah, no, the reason why we intended to do it as a rewatch at some point was because Mark had lied to me and told me he watched it, which he then revealed the other day was absolute bullshit and he hadn't. He's just a pathological
sometimes
liar.
He's got to tell a little fib for the love of the cast. But hey, I just got to experience watching this film for the first time. We've just got together, watched this. I know Ben's seen it before. Honestly, I really enjoyed this rewatch.
I wonder why. What year was it, mate?
It was great fun. It was stupid. It was silly. It didn't take itself seriously. It made me want to drink Coke, eat Skittles, go to McDonald's tonight,
yeah,
and just be happy.
And pop by Wix, get a broom or something.
I'm not going to talk straight away because, Ben, this is a film that's close to your heart and that you wanted to revisit for some time. A lot of people have been texting me this week going, I can't believe Ben's going to watch it again. Yeah. Tell me, how was it for the second time?
Well, put it this way. The film is a rip-off of E.T., and I fucking hate E.T. So I was never going to like Mac and Me, which is a really, really poor, low-rent, low-budget version of E.T. And it's the story of this group of aliens. They're on their home planet. Some sort of NASA probe lands on the planet, testing soil samples, manages to suck them up in some kind of Hoover device, crash lands back on Earth, and then these four monsters run amok. One of them ends up at the house of some little disabled lad, and wacky adventures ensue. It's Christ. It's terrible. And it's just an advert. As you alluded to, it's just one hour and a half product placement for McDonald's, Skittles, Coca-Cola, and Wix store. Of all places, Wix.
I like how Coca-Cola brings them back to life.
Yes, Coca-Cola is a magical life-giving elixir that is given to the aliens at certain points and revives them, no questions asked.
Adam, tell me about your views of Mac and Me.
Oh, it's so bad.
What? I'm going to defend this. I feel like it's Kevin Smith territory again.
Like,
I'd prefer this to Kevin Smith.
I'm interested. Obviously, we've managed to get that intro there. I actually want an interview set up with him because I want to know, did he know that the studio were going to put so much product placement in this film?
I've got a little bit of a... So these guys, I sprung this on them now, this intro, and I like to always, you know, just go, well, there you go, guys. I spoke to him on the phone last week and he told me that this film was wrote over a weekend in a hotel. The company had said they wanted this film and it was ditched on him quite last minute and he had a weekend to write the script and everything. I'm not saying he rushed it because some of the dialogue here is up with Tarantino, but you can tell that it probably didn't get the time it deserved. I don't recall Mac ever saying anything apart from like...
Well, they couldn't talk.
Yeah. He didn't even say phone home, which surprised me.
Must tweet home. That's the remake.
There'll be a remake soon where it's literally Mac phone home on my new EE.
Other phone networks are available. But yeah.
Service plan where I get unlimited 4G.
Now, I'm not trying to get him off the hook just because we've got an intro from him, but genuinely, I would say the script is the least objectionable thing about it. You know, it's all the product placement, which would be at the studio's behest. That would have been nothing to do with the script. The acting is actually fine for what it is. It's on a par with any other shit 80s film I've ever seen. So that's fine. Oi. Like all the crap
you're
going to
fall out.
Yeah. The problem for me was the creature itself. Now, as I said, there are four aliens. There's a mom, a dad, a sister, and a brother. Now, Mac is the little brother, the smallest one. The other three are all played quite clearly by humans in suits, whereas Mac is some really piss poor animatronics. Why? Why not just get Warwick Davis in?
Or any other actor.
Many other dwarfs are available.
Yes. But no, what I was getting a bit annoyed with there is, you know, when you're opening your Christmas presents and you can see, like, it's all wrapped up and it's a bike and it's obvious. Like, not only am I opening my presents and seeing what it is, you're ruining it for me. It's like my mum coming and saying, oh, by the way, Santa's not real. Yeah. You've just told me that, A, those aliens were people in suits. I was believing they were real for one moment.
Yeah.
And you're just dissing it. I'm sorry, but those aliens look good.
No, do you know what they look like? They look like Gandhi with a bumhole for a mouth. Honestly, go on to Google Images and search for Mac and Me, and Mac looks like Gandhi with a bumhole for a mouth.
I thought you were going to say, go on Google and type in Gandhi with a bumhole mouth.
Don't do that.
I mean, Ben's just said there, you know, for the...
Bumhole for a mouth.
For Mac, you could have used, you know, a short person.
Little fella.
And I appreciate him trying to get me work.
Well, I think there should be a remake, so... You know, you're there.
But, I mean, the film itself is... It's so bad, it's good. It's so bad, you have to watch it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And that's the key thing. It's one of those films that's... It's not so bad, it's good. It's just so... You have to watch it.
Yeah. If you're a film fan of any stripe, you need to have seen this at some point in your life.
It's a cult classic now. It's cemented for me in my all-time top 100.
There's some great scenes in it. Not genuine, obviously, they're awful, but there's one particular scene where his next-door neighbour is this annoying little cow, right? And she comes around his house and is riding on a vacuum for whatever reason. And the vacuum... Oh, it's because the alien's in it, isn't it? They've sucked up the alien. So anyway, she ends up riding up the wall on this vacuum and then up over the ceiling. And then you see her crash in the background. And it's clearly a dummy they've used, because if it was a real human, her legs would have been fractured in about six places. If you just freeze frame it and see her body get mangled on the floor. But then she's fine.
I also really liked... So they've this family have got obviously a son that's got major issues with having to be in a wheelchair all his life. I feel like we should have some violins in the background here. So they go and decide to buy a house on a very steep hill that leads to a big cliff that's over an ocean. Now, what do you think happens in this film? Spoilers here. The kid goes all the way down, fucking flies off this hill, midair, and lands in the water. It is amazing.
Max saves him, though.
Max saves him. The best part of that whole scene is just before he goes off the cliff, which, as you've stated, is right behind his house, his mum was talking about how that the house was wheelchair-friendly because it didn't have any stairs in it. Yeah, no stairs, just a big fucking cliff. Fine.
I'm going to put on Instagram this week a picture of that where he's flying because it's superb.
Yeah, get the gif on there.
The only way it could have been better is if Matt had then raised his finger and they'd flew across the cliff on his wheelchair.
Yeah, then lawsuits definitely would have occurred there.
Over
they
were
the moon. Skirting it.
This film was never getting sued.
Yeah. What would it achieve to sue this?
I enjoyed this film for a few reasons. It's filmed in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's so bad, it is good. And you have to remember, if you go for my DVD collection, I've got stuff like Basket Case. You know, I watch films that are bizarre and worse than this. So for me, this is quite high budget, decent, well-made, genuinely good fun. I haven't laughed at a rewatch in a long time with you guys. It's always been quite serious films, hasn't it?
Because you make us watch Kevin Smith films.
No laughs there.
Touché. And in this film, we were chuckling a lot. There were some good scenes. There's a couple of plot holes there. And the one scene I do want to talk about is when they visit McDonald's.
Oh, good Lord.
And for some reason, there's a kid's birthday party happening. And I actually said during this, guys, do you remember when you were a kid and had birthday parties at McDonald's? You'd have Ronald turn up and the Hamburglar and all this. But for some reason, there was 50 kids perfectly dancing to the perfect dance routine you've ever seen. Yeah. It's choreographed better than most musicals. It was perfection.
Yeah, and why would that happen?
And at this point, while they're dancing and it's all looking good, there's a little alien dressed in a teddy bear outfit, which has easy access around the bumhole area.
His arse or his mouth.
That must be an easy mistake to make. But he flies across and dances on the counter. And it is one of the greatest scenes I've seen for a long time.
And it's weird that when Max in that bear suit, how all of a sudden he looks like a small child rather than a really poorly made animatronic. Strange, isn't it?
Hmm.
But yeah, I enjoyed this film.
Strange.
You would. That scene in McDonald's is reprehensible. I could kind of understand if there was just a load of kids. I mean, why would kids be dancing in McDonald's? I don't know. But I can suspend my disbelief enough if they were just dancing, you know, freestyling. But the fact that it was 50 kids with a perfectly choreographed routine whilst Ronald McDonald dances around in the background. And in this film, in the credits, they say Ronald McDonald as himself. So that was actually him. That was the real Ronald McDonald.
That was the one.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with any others.
Changing the topic slightly. You guys, I'm sure, are familiar with the actor Paul Rudd, soon to be Ant-Man. Paul Rudd has got this habit of going on the Conan O'Brien talk show in the States, and he's been going on Conan's talk shows for something like 15 years. And you know when celebrities go on a talk show and they've got a movie to promote and the presenter will say, okay, now we're going to see a clip, and then you'll see a clip from Inception or whatever the hell the movie is. Every time Paul Rudd goes onto one of Conan O'Brien's talk shows, so he'll be there promoting Anchorman, or he'll probably do it for Ant-Man in the future, he did it for, you know, This Is 40. Conan will say, and now we have a clip from your latest film, and here it is. And without fail, Paul Rudd always shows the clip of the kid going off the cliff in his wheelchair from Mac and Me. Every single time. If you go on YouTube, you can find a supercut that is 6 minutes long of the dozen times that he's done this to him. And sometimes you see Conan, I'm sure he's in on the joke, but there are times when he seems genuinely angry, because he says things like, the studio can't be happy with you doing this because you're not promoting your film. Showing a clip from Mac and Me every bloody time.
I want to talk just, you know, about the ending of this film. So it's all hell's broke loose. It's all kicking off. They're in a supermarket and they're dying to get some more Cokes. That's the only thing that keeps them survived. They're hitting the drinks aisle, casually walking in, but as they're aliens, they're spotted quite quickly, and it's, these aren't humans. These don't even look like people from the Nuneaton. These are actual aliens. You know, I do think half of the cast were from the Nuneaton, but anyway, during this scene, they are stopped by the police and the security, and it all kicks off. skip about 10 minutes, the whole place blows up. And I'm talking Nolan-esque here with the hospital scene from Dark Knight. It is huge. This is Michael Bay explosion. Really, this is where the £10 million budget went, I think. Yeah. This was not CGI. This was a big, big kick-ass explosion. But unfortunately, in front, we see this slight silhouette of a boy in his wheelchair. Oh, no. Yep, he dies.
Shame.
Gutted. Can't believe he's dead.
He's not even involved in the explosion.
No, he's just in front of it. It probably just singes back if he's worse.
He's arguably a safe distance. In fact, in fact, this kills him, but doesn't knock him out of his chair.
No.
Yeah.
Dead.
If he was at a bonfire, he would have been at a safe distance.
He might have singed the back of his neck hair.
But how can it kill him? And how can it blow up with enough force to kill him, but not knock him out of his chair?
Don't know.
It's not like it threw him up in the air and then he landed and broke his neck again.
Shall we ring the scriptwriter again and ask him?
But anyway, he dies and, you know, I don't want to spoil it for too many people, so stop at this point and fast forward for 5 minutes if you don't know what happens, because it is a classic ending which you won't see coming.
Yeah, that's going to happen. People are going to go, oh no, they've said too much now.
They actually stop, and the only way to bring him back to life is that the Mac and his family come over. They all put their hands over him. I did notice one hand very close to his crotch. That is true.
But he's sexless. He didn't have anything down there anyway.
That's fine.
What? He's not sexless.
The kid? The kid did?
I was thinking about the aliens.
Oh, no. The
aliens didn't have any genitals.
The kid definitely had a little willy.
Weird.
That we know of.
But yeah, they put their hands over him and they actually bring him back to life.
And then become US citizens.
Now, this is the best bit. They suddenly then enter it's a church, isn't it?
It's like a courtroom.
Yeah, I thought it was like, here we go. And they're suited up, real nice, nylon, decent, top-of-the-range designer suit. Can't speak English, but they've got a driving licence and they're happily going around the streets, just driving in like a, was it a Cadillac or something?
Yeah, it was a Caddy.
Anyway, it didn't make any sense, that ending, for me.
But the rest of the film was fine.
Yeah.
My favourite thing about the whole thing is, throughout the entire film, these aliens have been walking, trying to find Mac.
Yeah.
Through these deserts and things like that. By the end of the film, he can drive.
Yeah.
He's driving a car.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to believe that his morality stops him from robbing a car and trying to find his son?
Well, the thing I found strange is that they gave them American citizenship and a nice Cadillac and all that after they saved the little kid, despite the clearly dozens of people they murdered in the explosion at the shopping centre.
Yeah.
Which was entirely their fault for brandishing a gun. Oh, yeah, by the way, we didn't mention this. One of the aliens had a gun at one point because why not?
He took that off a security guard that was originally pointing at him, I'll have you know. All he was trying to do is get some delicious, thirst-quenching Coca-Cola.
Ah, yeah, fair enough.
Product placement is worse than iRobot.
Yeah.
But it did make me want to go and eat some Skittles.
Should we wrap this up and go to McDonald's?
I just want to say one thing before this ends.
We don't even need to go to McDonald's, because what I can do is I can order takeout on my Samsung S5 phone from O2.
That's nice. A damn good phone and a damn good network.
So, guys, at the end of this film, at the very end, this bubblegum bubble comes up and says, "We'll be back."
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I'm just checking IMDb right now, and there isn't a sequel.
No. Are you starting to believe that may not be true?
So, considering this film was made in 1988, you know, some films like Star Wars, they took, you know, 20 years before they brought out the prequels, and now we've had to wait another 10 years. Maybe we're still waiting. But when I spoke to Stuart last week, he didn't mention anything about it. So I'm going to use just this two-minute section to say, if you're all for getting a sequel made of this film, tweet us and let us know you want to see it. If we can get more than 10 people...
Yeah.
I'll do all I can to remake this film. Even if I have to do it on my phone and just get Warwick, like you said,
yeah,
or someone else.
He'll be up for it. I'll write the script.
Yeah.
Because if he did it in, 2 days in a hotel, yep, I'll probably be able to do it in my lunch break at work.
I'll reach out to McDonald's and Coca-Cola to see if they want to.
They could do this.
I'm thinking let's go Pizza Hut and Pepsi.
Mac and me too.
No, because Pizza Hut are tied in with Turtles at the minute.
Ah, shame.
Skip to the End Productions gives you Mac and Me Too, a Skip to the End exclusive, 2016. It's going to happen. Could result in just one of my mates doing a quick animation for us, so we still stick to our word. But whatever happens, we're going to bring it to you next year.
And let us know you want it. Hashtag Mac and Me.
Mac and Me too.
Are we going to put that on the same weekend as Dawn of Justice?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I imagine, private screening at my house.
I imagine the trailer we cut for it will be better received than the Dawn of Justice trailer was.
We're going to get Paul doing the artwork. I'm telling you, this is going to happen. It's going to be one of those things that people are like, oh my God, they did it.
Right.
And we're going to make more than the original.
Let's wrap this up with a score.
You go first, Ben.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, it's a terrible film. Let's not delude ourselves, Mark, no matter what you think. It's awful. But by God, if it isn't fun and funny and stupid and silly and a good laugh. So 5.
Nice.
10. No, I've the weirdest thing is, as much as I can criticise it, I have no strong feelings against this film.
No, it was good fun. We've laughed.
It made me laugh. It was good fun.
I do actually prefer it to E.T., which I still hate.
There you go. 8 for me.
You've
got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I'm giving it an 8, just so it bumps it up.
Well, you are joking.
At least I can do the maths that 5 plus 5 plus 8 is 18, which is divided by 3 is 6. So at least we can get a nice even number.
That's
on that.
That's good. So well done. You've got a 6 out of 10. Now it's time for next rewatch, which is Adam's choice.
It is. And dropped a little hint earlier on in the show. And it's going to be one of the actors from Scott Pilgrim. He's going to be involved in the rewatch.
Oh, yeah.
In some way. So Aubrey Plaza is in Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
She's rumoured to be working on Clerks 3.
Oh, fuck.
So we're watching Jersey Girl.
You fucking...
No, we're not.
That would be dreadful.
I was about to storm. I was about to be like Robert Downey Jr. in that Channel 4 interview the other day, and I was out the fuck.
That would be dreadful.
No, it's Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Lovely stuff. Great film. Look forward to it.
Nice. Questions and answers time. We always put it out to you guys on social media. You know the addresses by now. Keep the questions coming, and each time we'll answer them for you. First one, at BlameFrower83. This guy won a t-shirt of us. Good guy. Which video game adaptation after your episode previously that said you hated them all and did your three worst, what is actually one of your favourites?
I don't know that there is one. I don't know that there's been a good one. Adam, you probably know better than I, because you're a bigger gamer than me. I can't think of a good one.
Don't sell yourself short. You're quite a big gamer.
Well, you're both big gamers.
I'm a weekend gamer.
Yeah.
There aren't any.
There must be some.
I don't think there are.
Silent Hill?
No.
Nope. See? Done.
Done.
Resident Evil Damnation is technically not an adaptation of the video game. It's a Japanese animated story set in between a couple of the video games, and that's actually very good.
So I think we've talked before how there are a couple of decent animations based on games, but I don't think there are any good live-action movies.
No.
Like Final Fantasy VII Advent Children. It's a good follow-on to the game as an animated story from the developers of the game.
And you're a big fan of one of the Street Fighter animations, aren't you, Mark?
Yeah, the manga Street Fighter 2. Really good. But sorry, Blame for it. There aren't any. Trick question, I think you tried to get to.
We'll just name 3.
But as in...
Live-action.
Live-action, though, aren't they? Apart from Super Mario Bros.
Shame.
Nerdy G, which is at... Nerdfro_P. Would you do a collaboration podcast?
With who?
With other podcasts, people like Bad Wolf, etc. So other podcasts out there, would you ever join forces to make the ultimate?
Well, I'd never say never, but it would depend entirely who it is. If it was someone worthy, like Mark Maron or one of these guys, then definitely. If it was Kevin Smith, then I'd rather be killed.
Next week on the show. Oh, I've had a big surprise. I got him everything.
Yeah, I'm with Ben there. Never say never. It'd have to be the right match, though, the right mix of...
How about some ladies? If there's a podcast out there that is a movies podcast presented by 3 women who fancy getting together... You know,
but are you trying to set up a date? Or
not necessarily a date. I'm not really much
stick
into
to Tinder,
date.
Dude. But no, Chris Jericho, give us a call.
Yeah.
I'd like to get you and us to talk. David Savage, which is at David_Savage83. He was looking at our skip back in time section, and he chose Inception. He was horrified that, you know, the film Burlesque.
Mm-hmm.
That was the second most successful film that year. He wants an explanation why.
People are idiots.
Yeah, there's that. Musicals tend to do well. I can't fathom it. A lot of people like them.
It's
I
because
don't know why.
I think there are a lot of people that go like every other weekend. They go cinema after a dinner date or something like that with the partner, and they think, let's go and see a film. We'll just choose something that's on.
It's people being pussies, just going, yeah, right then, darling, I'll go and do that as long as you watch Match of the Day when we get home.
I wouldn't say it like that. No. and then they just, when they're there, they're like, oh, what should we watch? And then there's a musical on, and they think, oh, it's a musical. I don't really have to think about that.
Yeah. I'm still reeling from Adam using the term dinner date.
I like that.
You don't hear that one very often.
No, you don't.
He's bringing it back.
Deece.
We don't know really why. There's just, I like your first reason. Was it there's a lot of idiots?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thomas Hill, if you could relive your first viewing of any cinema experience, what would it be and why?
Wow, good question.
I thought about this, and it is a little bit inappropriate, but I'm going to say it because...
Magic Mike?
I've never really held back and made myself try and look smart or, you know, clean and nice. So
clean?
Well, I'm going to be dirty and have to give a little dirty story now. When I went to see Jurassic Park 2,
yeah.
I was about 15. Great film, in Shrewsbury. Went with my girlfriend at the time.
And your sister?
That's not my sister, but I said Shrewsbury, not that other place. But anyway, I went to see Jurassic Park 2, and I'm not a massive fan of that film, but during the film...
Oh, no. If he tells me he got wanked off, I'm out. I'm going.
It's degrading.
I'm going home.
No, I was going to say I had a hand shandy.
Which is the same thing. Brilliant.
And it was superb.
Did you really get tossed off watching Jurassic Park 2?
Yes.
This is too much information.
That was a great cinema experience. Oh, since then...
I don't think that's what he meant when he asked
no,
the question.
No, no, I think you've lost the sort of the crux of it a little bit there.
But I'm just saying, I went to the cinema, it was a great experience, and I really enjoyed it. Good on you.
That's the end of the podcast, I'm done with this.
See you later, guys.
Cinema experience-wise would be Jurassic Park 1. I didn't get...
Blowjob?
No, Jurassic Park 1 was spectacular. I was very young, it was amazing. To see that for the first time, the Tyrannosaurus Rex and everything, I'm so glad I saw it at the cinema.
When you see touching... that with your girlfriend slash sister as well.
No. When we were just talking then about how you wish you'd seen certain films at the cinema, I'd hate to have not seen that in the cinema, and it worked. And at that age, you were glued to the screen for the whole 2 hours, and it was superb, and I'd love to see that again.
I said Guardians. I'd love to relive that first time I watched it.
I loved it when the original Star Wars trilogy were re-released, other than the god-awful changes they made to them. I loved seeing A New Hope on the big screen for the first time, and I'd like to just feel that way again. And hopefully, maybe we'll do that in December. Maybe that's what it'll be like when we go and see Episode 7.
Hopefully.
The only other thing, I know a lot of people slag it off and diss it, but when I first went to see Avatar, it was in 3D with the different technology instead of the blue and red.
Yeah.
I was blown away. I'd never seen anything like it, and I remember... the first scene in the spaceship, and it literally, I just took me about 5 minutes to kind of digest and look at it. And for the rest of the film, I was like, wow. But since, there's been a lot of other 3D, but that was one of those things where...
So come on, Mark, is it that or the hand job?
My dream is that I go and see a 3D hand job. But yeah.
Go and see a 3D hand job.
Yeah, oh, God. I'm going to leave that in. Anyway, Game Seeker. You can turn... This is. We should have put this with Ben's question. You can turn any game into a movie. He said he's listened to some of our podcasts and we've talked about it, but now, because obviously we've played a lot of games recently. Adam, you've got a lot more recent. Is there something you've played recently that you think that will work as a movie?
I'd love to see FIFA 15 as a movie. I'd love to see what football is like in real life.
I don't think you're taking this seriously.
No, I'm not.
Come on. Alex the Kid in Miracle World. That would be... astonishing. Come on, Adam. Huge game that you are. Deliver the goods.
Well, they're making The Last of Us. That could be quite a good experience. I've already said before, I think, around about this question, what I think we got asked before, what video game would you like to see as a film? Yeah. And I said something like, I mean, they're doing Warcraft. It's an MMORPG. Anything like that, anything like Destiny, which doesn't follow a specific story, but it's more the world it's set in. That you can just create a story for within that world would usually work.
I would genuinely like to see either a film or TV series of Grim Fandango. I wouldn't want it to be live action. I would want it to have the same animation style as the game does because it's really compelling and interesting. But yeah, I love that.
Oddworld, that'd be a good one.
Mm.
My friend Richard Booth, we haven't mentioned him for a while. He said, it's not really a question, but he'd like to hear your views on the Suicide Squad. The new picture was released, we've seen the Joker picture. With the director, David Ayer, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this could work? He thinks it's going to be quite nasty and gritty, but it has thoughts of him on the director and the movie so far. What do you think?
I think the criticism being levelled at it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's too soon to judge, isn't it?
Yeah. We've seen plenty of rebuttal from people recently with the comments about Heath Ledger when he was first cast. And one of the things that's really annoying me at the minute is how people are saying... oh, but he looks nothing like the Joker from the comic books. Oh, she looks nothing like Harley Quinn from the comic books. Ledger's Joker looks nothing like the Joker from the comic books. Doesn't mean it's going to be a bad portrayal or a bad film.
No.
Wait and see.
I like the new picture. I like the look of Will Smith as Deadshot. I think he looks really cool, especially the separate picture they released where he's got the full mask on as well. Adam, you and I spoke about this before we started recording, but even though Harley Quinn isn't wearing anything we've seen her in the comics, I think it is a bit too sort of overly sexualized.
It is, yeah. But that's a common theme with Harley Quinn at the minute. Mm. Everyone who seems to get their hands on a character makes her overly sexual.
Yeah.
And it's ludicrous. It's unnecessary.
I watched End of Watch recently.
Good
and
film.
I thought that was really well made. Mm-hmm. I've recently watched Fury because Adam got me for my birthday. Cheers for that.
No worries.
And director, I have full faith he'll nail it. I think he's a really, really good director. He's not done a lot. And I think this will be his film that gives him the leverage he needs, you know, like the Guardians did for James Gunn. And I think I'm looking forward to it. I think it's in safe hands. I like what I've seen of the Joker. I think if anyone can really get into the mind of him, it can be that guy. But stop slagging stuff off when it's only a picture. It annoys me.
Yeah.
Give it a chance. Wait till we get a trailer, then start talking.
Welcome to the internet.
Yeah. Last question, and probably my favourite question that we've had so far over all the episodes.
All 20 episodes.
Yeah. At Zazzy Bird, is there any current movies you've seen in the last few years that you think we'll look back at in 10, 20 years and regard them as classics?
Guardians.
Yeah, I second that. I think Guardians is going to be looked back as one of the all-time great superhero films and one of the all-time great sort of space opera movies.
It'd be the Star Wars of our generation.
Yeah.
I think if they follow it up with two more as good as that, it will be the Star Wars trilogy.
I love the idea of that. In 20 years' time, you've got your kid and you're like, come on, this is it. This is a classic. I think Whiplash, I think we're going to look back at that and say the acting in this is superb. And I think in years to come, we will keep visiting that back. And I believe it deserves the hype. And the more people I speak to that recently watched it say it automatically goes in their top 10 films of all time. The only other film I think we'll look back at because it needs time to digest and people then to look back at is Her. I think we'll look back at that and go, wow, that was so ahead of its time. And it'll frighten you that we probably will have operating systems and we will have these earpieces and Google Glass and all this. And we probably be like, shit, they knew what we're doing.
I think Her is going to be one of those films that pretentious people throw out. I think that's what we're going to do. I think there's going to be a film in about 5 years' time that covers a similar sort of topic. And everyone will just go, oh, well, they've just ripped that from Her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like this when it was called Her.
Yeah.
That sort of comment.
As I sip in the skinny
latte.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen with Her. I think Whiplash, I think technically, I think we're still on the hype train with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm talking 20 years. I think we'll look back and go.
And that's my only concern with it. I think it's great. It's a great film and I love it to bits. In a few years' time, I hope it's still at that level. I really do.
Clarks 3?
Yeah.
That'll be up there, won't it?
Back of me too.
Yeah.
In all in 20 years' time, we could all look back at Jersey Girl.
Yep.
And say, oh yeah, it's still shit.
Thanks for the questions. Please keep them coming in. We'll answer all of them. So Twitter at STT Podcast, facebook.com/skipsthempodcast. Thanks again. Speak to you later. Shame.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. That's episode 20 done, lads. That's some impressive stuff, isn't it?
Yep.
Monstrous.
Should we do another 20 more?
Let's do it.
Let's keep going. So next time around then, in 2 weeks, Mark, what film are we going to be reviewing?
Mad Max.
Fury Road. I'm pretty damn excited for this. The trailers have looked insane. Adam, what are we rewatching?
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Unbelievable. Great film. Very much looking forward to that. We've also got a top three. We're going to be discussing our top three actresses of all time to kind of redress the fact that this show is generally a sausage fest. I want to bring the ladies into it. And
2009 we'll be revisiting.
2009, yeah, which again is another good year. Have you guys started looking at 2009 yet?
Yeah, it's between about eight at the moment for me.
Yeah, it is very, very, very tough.
And of course, we've got the Monsters Dark Continent poster.
Winner announced, week, yeah.
So a lot to look forward to. Now, I would quite like to wrap the podcast up here and say bye-bye to the good listeners, but I've got a feeling Mark's got something for us.
Another idea, perhaps? Another winner? World beater?
Yeah.
Or like his regular ones?
Probably the latter.
Right, boys. This week, suggestion. You both come over to my house and you bring a film with you.
Okay.
Pick any film, but we all need to make sure it's kind of similar in theme or genre. So, say for now we want to do violent films, you bring RoboCop, you bring Con Air if you want, and I'll bring Terminator, okay?
Con Air!
Con Air's brilliant. Now, what we do is we try and chop them up and we try and work out how we put these films together. So maybe a robot goes on a plane, it gets taken over, and what was the film I gave you there as well? RoboCop, and when they land, he becomes a police officer. You know, that sort of thing. So we mix them all up and we try and get it to go.
Not legal, okay.
No, but we come up with it, we cut it all up, and we that's it. And we deliver the masterpiece. Skip to the blend.
Fucking hell.
You're a skip to the bell end.
Do you like that?
No.
Not going to be a feature?
No.
Stay tuned next week for...
Turn the recorder off, we're done.
See ya.